From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're pleased to welcome in Heidi Matzke, the Executive Director of Alternatives Pregnancy Center. Heidi, good day to you.
Good day to you, too. That was actually one of my favorite hymns growing up.
Oh, wonderful. Church. Well, we played it just for you.
I almost started singing as you were saying that. clapping that goes along with it.
You're allowed to sing and clap. I'm not allowed to sing on the air. That's part of my contract. No singing.
Oh, it's so great to talk to you, Bob.
Yes, it's good to talk to you. The last time we talked, you had bad news.
I had really bad news. Yeah, so those in your listening audience that may not know, Alternative Pregnancy Center is located off of 1111 Howe Avenue, and we have been in that facility for the last, since 2012. And when we had a huge rainstorm here in Sacramento on a Sunday evening, it literally poured from the ceilings. And what was ironic is later I realized our little 3,800 square feet of a 40,000 square foot building was the only space affected. And it poured from the ceiling. And what was ironic about that is 3 days before, we were trying to figure out as an organization how we were going to grow. And we had just, the board had approved an $80,000 build-out for a second exam room in our clinic. So that was on that Thursday before. And then that Sunday, God brought the flood. And clearly said, growth strategy in that building is not in his plan. And so, you know, we initially felt devastated by that, but truly felt that was God's divine intervention. And praise God, a week after that, we completely moved out of the clinic. And then a week after that, we have found a permanent new home.
Oh,
and
wow.
We are in the process of buying our own building now. And everything about that property is just an incredible blessing from the Lord. Where there seems to be no way, God always intervenes and makes a way. So right now, wow. The property is located between Watt and Howe on Folsom Boulevard. And
wow, a busy area.
Standalone, right across from Light Rail, standalone facility, mm-hmm. and just happens to back up to a church that I found out the senior pastor there used to be the board president of Alternative Pregnancy Center.
The coincidences are overwhelming.
It is. And so God is, it's not a done deal yet, but we are asking for a Christmas miracle and asking God to make this this purchase happen. So we're just pleading with people, if God places it on your heart to give to ministries like ours. We would love to be a part of your year-end giving and just so thankful for how God intervenes in our lives.
That's amazing. That was such a rainstorm right at the end of October. And I saw an ark going down the Sacramento River. I don't know about you, but Noah was waving at me.
it was an interesting day. We'd just gotten home from church and sat down, and my husband and I were sitting down on the couch, and then all of a sudden I got a call from one of our ladies at the clinic, and she said, "I just looked at the cameras, and you're never going to believe this, but the chandeliers have fallen from the ceiling."
Oh, wow.
And it's literally like 4 inches of water all throughout the clinic.
So you had like a roof leak?
So what happened was even though we're on the second floor, the rain on the roof was so bad it went over the curb of the HVAC unit and into the ductwork. And so it literally poured from the ceilings throughout the whole bottom of the clinic. So, but you know what? Like I said, we oftentimes look at these situations and can fear and wonder and be devastated. But, you know, when you have faith in who God is you love the Lord, you know that he works all things for good, and he creates miracles where there seems to be no way, and that's truly what he's done and is in the process of doing. So, yeah, super exciting stuff.
So how long has Alternatives existed?
So Alternatives has been serving the community for 38 years. We're getting ready to go on our 39th year. And then, we have been a licensed medical clinic for the last 18 years and been at the location that we're at since 2012. So, and just a full-service medical clinic with a women's medical clinic offering hope and life. We call ourselves pro-woman, pro-gospel, pro-life. That's what we're about. So helping women who face unplanned pregnancies and get the privilege to share the hope of Jesus Christ with every woman that comes into our clinic. So,
and you support yourself through donations and et cetera?
Yes. So we receive no government funding. All of our funding comes from individuals and churches and businesses who value the sanctity and beauty of human life and value life in the womb. So that's how we get our donations, yes. And so anybody in the listening audience can learn a little bit more about us by going to pgtest.com. So PG for pregnancy, pgtest.com. And if you want to learn more about us, or if you want more information about where Alternatives is heading location-wise, feel free to give our clinic a call.
And people can learn how to donate there, too, if they wanted to help you with your new building?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're doing a new building year-end giving where our building right now is about 7,000 square feet, and so you can help purchase a square foot with $250. And in a couple of in about a month, when it's official, we're going to invite everybody down and rip up the floor and have everybody write their name on the floor and write a Bible verse, and we're going to pray over that building and dedicate it to the Lord.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, yeah. Heidi, it's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you. So good to hear you, too.
I'm glad.
Someday I'll get to see you again.
Yes. Yes. One day, our paths will cross again.
Yes.
For sure. We may both be wearing masks, but
yes,
we'll know who's who. Heidi, always a joy. God bless you and your family and all those great people you take care of.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Take care.
God bless.
Thanks, Heidi. God bless. That's
all right,
Heidi Matsky, who is the executive director of Alternatives Pregnancy Center here in Sacramento. The bishops have been meeting in Washington, D.C. all during the last week, and a lot of news will come out of that, and we'll talk to Bishop Soto at some point when he gets back from that. Interestingly, three U.S. lay people, the bishops, have given the okay to these candidates for sainthood, the sainthood causes, for three U.S. citizens. I'll just share a little bit about them with you. Joseph Dutton is a sainthood candidate with the title of Servant of God. He was a Civil War veteran. Sometimes it takes a little while to get the sainthood cause moving. He served in the leprosy settlement in Hawaii from 1886 to 1931. That's 45 years. And he said it was an atonement for his turbulent post-war years. So he was in the Civil War, which ended in 1865. So 21 years later, he began working in Hawaii with, of course, Father Damien, Saint Damien. What a story that is. He assisted both Saint Damien and Sister and Saint Marianne Cope, primarily as, quote, a dresser of sores. And you can imagine how difficult that work was. So the U.S. bishops meeting on November 17 agreed that the sainthood causes for three lay people from the United States should be advanced by their respective dioceses. Bishop Douglas DeShottle of Lafayette, Louisiana, presented the causes of August Robert Nonko, Pelefig, and Charlene Richard. Bishop Larry Silva of Honolulu, of course, presented the third cause, that of Joseph Dutton, who we just discussed. The 2007 Vatican document, Sanctorum Mater, requires the diocesan bishop promoting a sainthood cause to consult with the body of bishops on the advisability of pursuing the cause. The bishops affirmed advancement of all three causes via voice votes with no audible dissent on the second of 2 days of public sessions during the November 15 to 18 fall general meeting in Baltimore. All three sainthood candidates have the title Servant of God given to them when their causes were officially opened. In the case of Pelefig, he joined the Apostleship of Prayer League of the Sacred Heart while a college student. He maintained a lifelong devotion to the Sacred Heart and to the Blessed Mother. On Saturdays, he taught religion to public school children, and during the summer, Christmas, and Lent, he introduced children and adults of the area to the stage by inviting them to perform in Sacred Heart programs and plays he personally wrote and directed for the children. That's according to the biography submitted by the Diocese of Lafayette in Louisiana. He organized a League of the Sacred Heart with about 1,200 members, traveling on foot to spread the word. He offered rides even in the poorest of weather conditions. He always declined, saying it was his way of doing penance for conversions and for the poor souls in purgatory, so he would decline the rides. As he grew up, he was given the nickname Nonko, a derivative of the French uncle for uncle. He was everybody's uncle, said Bishop DeShottle in addressing the bishops on November 17. Charlene Richard was described as a laywoman, but she was just 12 and a half years old when she died in 1959 from acute lymphatic leukemia. Charlene was described as a normal little girl who liked sports and went to church until 4 months before her death when she read a book about Saint Therese of Lisieux. She asked her grandmother if she too could become a saint by praying like Therese, according to a diocesan biography. She's a young girl. The last 2 weeks of her life, the only time she spent outside her rural town, were gifts of grace. The priests who attended to her spiritual needs were asked by her who she could suffer for on that day. The biography said when the hospital chaplain, a newly ordained priest, was sent to tell her of her prognosis, Charlene replied, "Father, when the Blessed Mother comes, I'll tell her you said hello." Franciscan Sister Teresita Crowley, who witnessed Charlene's acceptance of her suffering, would later say, "I can't forget her. I feel her presence. I feel her smile," adding that she prays to Charlene daily. The religious sister's devotion spread to others in the area where people prayed to the little Cajun saint, asking for her intercession for situations ranging from marital problems to finding jobs to seeking good weather for their crops. So one story is told of another girl with cancer who kept asking for Charlene, even though she had never been told of her existence. So when someone supplied her with a prayer card bearing Charlene's picture, the girl said Charlene, and her cancer went into remission. Although the case was never submitted as a potential miracle, many people in the area considered it one. Wow, interesting stuff. By 1989, the biography says, hundreds of people were visiting Charlene's grave each week. The cemetery installed a light so visitors could more easily identify the gravesite and added a box so they could leave written requests. Her gravesite is visited by busloads of people. Near and far is an example of redemptive suffering. This innocent child who has proven to be an inspiration to all of us who carry the cross of illness. And then, of course, Joseph Dutton, who was born in 1843, moved to Wisconsin in 1847 and later served in the Civil War. And spent so long working. He joined the Catholic Church in Memphis, Tennessee in 1883, learned about the work of Father Damien, now St. Damien of Molokai, and his ministry to what Bishop Silva called the pandemic of leprosy on Hawaii's islands. Dutton made passage to Hawaii and joined the future saint, who himself had recently been diagnosed with leprosy, which is today is called Hansen's disease. The courage of my dear brother Joseph Ira B. Dutton appears to respond very well to the special calling for which our blessed Lord has chosen him. He takes a special interest in all the concerns, the altars and sacristies of our churches, St. Damian wrote. He also acts as our druggist, and he's truly a good confrere to me. Wow. It was some amazing, amazing stories. In 1892, Dutton, at the request of Mother Marian Cope, now St. Marian of Molokai, was received as a Third Order Franciscan in 1895. He took charge of the Baldwin Home for Boys with a capacity of 120 and meant for troubled and abused boys, which he did until he reached the age of 87 in 1930, and he died the following year. In this year of St. Joseph, we proposed sainthood for this other Joseph, who was the foster father of hundreds of young men at that time, according to Bishop Silva of Hawaii. He has many devotees throughout the world. Several books have been written about him. People from New York, from Baltimore, from Hawaii, from Indiana have suggested that we propose his cause of canonization. The importance of this cause for the local and universal church is very timely in light of the situation of the present day. The poor and disadvantaged are often the objects of a throwaway culture, abandoned to their limited or practically non-existent resources. But Dutton, along with the two saints, is a brilliant testimony of the presence and activity of Catholic Church for the downtrodden and abandoned. About 60 sainthood causes are now working their way through the process toward, these are of Americans, and including our own Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. So fascinating, fascinating story. We will take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Kevin, for that wonderful introduction. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour on this beautiful day the Lord has made, and we're pleased to welcome in Molly Sheehan, who is the new Respect Life Director for the California Catholic Conference. The conference represents all the bishops of the state of California and is located right here in downtown Sacramento. Molly, good day to you.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Well, good to hear your voice. We haven't met, but I've been reading all about you and your new position. Tell us, first off, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a native of Sacramento?
Yes, I grew up here. My home parish was Presentation, mm-hmm. so it's good to be back home. After college, I worked for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, organizing their Walk for Life for a few years and just working on pro-life issues and social justice issues there with the churches. And then I went to grad school in Washington, D.C. at the John Paul II Institute, and I studied theology of marriage and family and just loved that. And while I was there, I was interning on Capitol Hill, so I got to learn more about the political side, and most recently was lobbying for the Maryland bishops. But I've just moved back to my hometown, and yeah, really happy to be back.
Wow. And because you wouldn't say it, I'll say it. You graduated magna cum laude with your master's from the John Paul II Institute.
I did. It was, yeah, a real blessing to be able to study there. So wonderful time.
You get a halo for that, or what? What do they do when you?
you get the words, and they're like, okay, go have fun.
Now go find a job.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Here in Sacramento, we go to the Walk for Life in San Francisco, the West Coast Walk for Life in January. But we all know about One Life LA, the Walk for Life down there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it was a real blessing for me. Right after college, I started working and helping organize One Life LA. And One Life is really a celebration of the beauty and dignity of human life. And so because it's in the center of culture, which is Los Angeles, you know, the goal is to celebrate how good it is that we are here and that dignity of the human person is recognized. And so from womb to tomb, right, from beginning of life to natural death. So we, you know, people walk through the streets and there's just this really joyful and excited atmosphere, and people have their signs, and then we end at the Los Angeles State Historic Park, and there's salsa music, and we have fun speakers, and there's food trucks, and people can sign up for service, because the goal of the event is for it to be a catalyst for change in the community. And so it's a really wonderful thing. I found it really informative, and a lot of people talked about how One Life helps them to understand what it really means to be pro-life, that this is an invitation for everyone to see the goodness of human beings. So, really beautiful day. If anyone has an experience and lines up in L.A. around that time, they should go check it out.
Is it coincide with Roe v. Wade, or is it separate from that entirely?
Yeah, so it's intentionally near, so the Saturday closest to the anniversary of Roe v. Wade.
Right.
Right, to really just emphasize that, you know, we recognize the humanity of the unborn child, and that we want to build a society as God sees it. So that would be one where there is no abortion, where there is no, none of these issues that are attacking the dignity of the human person. Instead, really seeing these are the human beings that are most vulnerable, and that we will defend and that we will celebrate.
When you work for the Maryland Catholic Conference as a lobbyist, so you're working with the Maryland legislature, not with the D.C., or did you work with, in the Capitol as well?
So at the
U.S. Capitol, I mean, right.
Yes, I understand. So at the Maryland Catholic Conference, we were focused on state legislation, so I got to know the Maryland legislators. But prior to that, I had interned in both the U.S. Senate and for a caucus. And so I got to work within the Capitol building itself and, in the Senate offices and get to see kind of the other side of the desk, see what it's like to, receive the phone calls. And, I can tell people that if they call their senator, there is an intern sitting at that desk that answers your call and records it, or texts that voicemail, or writes down every single email that you send. So, those calls do get answered, and your voice does matter. I can tell you that because I did that job. So.
Well, I know that the conference, the California Catholic Conference, will frequently put out alerts saying we're concerned about this bill, we're concerned about that bill. Call, email, whatever, text your assemblyman or woman or your state senator. And it's good to hear you say that matters. And I know it does matter from the people I know in the legislature. They say it might not be a direct result of an exact number, but if something comes in 10 to 1 against something, that's going to wake them up.
Absolutely. Yeah, you do take notice. You notice what the people are saying, and every single contact of a constituent, so if you live within that district, every single contact that you make with that office gets recorded. So they have the whole record of everything you've ever sent them because they want to know what their constituents think. And you're right, it may not be that, you know, if you email about this one bill that you want them to oppose, they may still be in favor of that bill, but they learn from the amount of emails that they get and from the arguments that people make, and so maybe they might not push as hard on it. Or maybe they'll not introduce a similar bill next year. Or maybe they'll be a little softer on it. Or, you know,
maybe there'll be an amendment of some sort that softened. Yeah, like, you know,
exactly.
It's funny. There have been a number of times in my life where I was pretty set on an issue. I wouldn't say that on abortion. That one, I can't imagine anybody would change my mind. But where listening to an argument, there are times when I've had to say, oh, I hadn't looked at it that way. It doesn't mean I flipped, but it does mean I went, oh, yeah, you know, I need to consider that, you know, because sometimes you go off on a tangent and you think this is great legislation or this is great whatever. And if you hear from other people, not just that they're opposed to it, but why they are, it can really open your mind and make you, you know, probably a better legislator, number one, a better human being, number two, but also willing to compromise or maybe even change your mind because you just hadn't viewed something in a certain way.
Definitely. If you hear from someone who is speaking to you briefly and calmly and really kindly, that has a huge impact. And if they hear your experience and your story, if you personally have, you know, experienced something like this, but that goes a long way. But even if not, as long as you just say, hey, I'm concerned about this and I'm your constituent and I just urge you to oppose this or I'd urge you to support this, that can be so helpful to them just to hear that perspective. And they really do want it. I can tell all of the listeners that, yes, your legislator wants to hear from you. And if you get a form letter back, I know some people get upset when they get a form letter. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, they didn't really read it. But the staff in the office had to write that form letter. So someone had to take the time to look at your conversation, and, you know, maybe lots of other people are having that conversation. It was important enough for the office to spend a lot of time to put together that form letter. So know that, like, whatever you're saying to the legislator gets heard, and it does have an impact.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just so important because legislation changes our lives. And so much legislation, not a lot, but every now and then there will be something that becomes law that's actually named after one person and their experience, like Megan's Law, you know, where it somebody had a certain experience and the legislators could relate to that and actually pass a law. It doesn't always mean it's a good law or it's a bad law, but frequently it's based on somebody's story that they heard.
Absolutely. Yeah, our stories carry a lot of weight. And I think just being able to give that personal touch, just saying like, hey, this is something that I've experienced. And for those reasons, I'd really urge you to support, you know, helping foster kids or supporting pregnant moms or whatever mm-hmm. your story might be. The way that you share that story, well, especially if you do it kindly and briefly and concisely, but just by telling that, it goes a long way. It really, really does. So I just want to emphasize that for everyone that it matters when you call your legislator, and so don't stop doing it. And if you get an alert from the California Catholic Conference, you should reach out to your legislator and let them know that what your opinion is.
So with your job title now, Are you not specifically a lobbyist?
I am. So my job is to...
You are a lobbyist. Okay.
I am a lobbyist, yes.
Okay.
So I specifically work with the legislators, help to build up coalitions on different bills, and then review the bills that get introduced and see which ones we should be supporting or opposing, and also recommend bills to legislators. Mm-hmm. I'm currently trying to think of, you know, what kinds of things could be done in our state to, you know, support pregnant moms better, or to combat human trafficking, or to help foster kids to find their, good foster families and make sure that those foster families have the support that they need. So those are some of the things that I'm looking into and trying to figure out what can be done here. Because there's always opportunities, and politics is the art of the possible, right? So trying to think, what is possible? Because there is so much that we can do.
Yeah, I mean, the state of California is very unlikely in the near future to, let's say, ban abortion. But
right. It
does have, apparently it really has a lot of the resources. I just saw a $31 billion surplus. We do have the resources to provide a lot of help to people in need, that might actually reduce, perhaps dramatically, the rate of abortion.
It's so true. If we look realistically at our legislature, I don't think that we're going to be able to end abortion by law in our state.
Right.
Other states might do that, and that would be wonderful. But in our state, that's not practically going to happen anytime soon. But it's true. What we can do, and what is within our grasp, very easily, in fact, is to be able to support moms and dads and babies and families, and to strengthen them, to make sure that they're able to choose life. Something that I talk about a lot, Bob, is, a lot of we often hear that it's low-income moms who are the most likely to have an abortion, which is tragic, but they're also the most likely to identify as pro-life in polls. And it's the same thing with, we see a higher rate of abortions for Black and Latina moms, but we also know that Black women and Latina women, according to the Knights of Columbus Merit Pool, are incredibly pro-life.
Absolutely.
They pull much higher in terms of being pro-life across the spectrum. So when we look at that, it's like, okay, here's what we need to do. We need to be able to make sure that the women that want to choose life are able to. That these women, they want to have a family. They want to have children. Especially at a time when we're seeing that the demographic shift, where a lot of women are saying that they didn't have as many children as they wanted to have. That's tragic. And so I think in our society, with the kind of wealth that we have here in the United States, it's possible for us to support families and make sure that they're able to choose life for their children and really welcome the children that they want in the first place. Like they really want to have a family and to love their children. And so part of our legislation really should be focused on building up those families and making sure that they're able to choose life and to choose what is good and virtuous, which is, celebrating the life of their unborn child.
Yeah, I feel like we should have a $31 billion State of California Gabriel project. I remember discussing this with my wife, and all the surplus, and we have three teenage daughters in college, and right at that age where. And I want to say to my daughters, you and they're going to a public university. What resources would there be at this university that we've got resources for just about everything and every condition known to man? But if you got pregnant, they would look at you and go, "Oh, we don't. Here's the number of a clinic." That would be their response to you. You'll probably have to drop out of school, and you definitely can't be on the volleyball team, and you may have to change your major. And, it would be – everything would be negative. There would be no resources for them to go to. Like I say, any other problem you're having on campus, they've got an office and full-time people to help you through that problem. But if you happen to be pregnant, forget it. And it's not pro-choice. It's no choice.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Exactly what you're saying. So a couple of years back, California passed AB 809, which requires that all public universities list the rights of pregnant parents and students in their health center and at orientation, and clearly marked on their website. Because from our research, we found that California colleges, most of them didn't have that information available. And so exactly what you're describing was happening, that students would be, you know, told, well, you can't take time off to give birth. If you, you know, don't show up for the test, well, you're going to fail the class, right? Or, you know, just honestly be thinking, oh, I guess I can't finish my degree. I'm going to have to drop out of school. And that's actually against federal law. And so California passed a law to say, listen, you need to be able to make sure that they're aware of their rights. So all pregnant parents and students have these rights. And that they can't be discriminated against, and that if a mom chooses life, she needs to be able to be supported throughout her pregnancy and as a parent on campus. But one of the effects of the law is, you know, the law exists, but not all campuses have implemented it yet. So something I'd encourage, if anyone just, like, has some spare time and they're hanging out, check if your local college, public campus in California has Title IX rights listed on their website for pregnant and parenting students. And if not, you can let them know about this law and say, hey, you know, these students deserve to know their rights. This is California law, and it's also just a good thing to do to make sure that our students are supported and assisted and able to achieve their educational dreams.
Yeah, it's one thing, though, to not discriminate against anyone and to give them a list of places off campus where they can get food and housing and support, and probably the Catholic Church, and et cetera. It's another thing to affirmatively provide resources that itself. I mean, I look at, like, you've got 80 guys on a football team at the University of California, and one of them struggling in math. Well, they get him a tutor right there on campus, provided by the campus to help him pass math. Or are they doing the same thing for a student that is having difficulty because, you know, they're in an unwed pregnancy?
Yes, I think you're right. The kind of supportive services that a student mom would need are different, and they are varied. And yeah, it's one thing to say, well, we'll just post your rights and that's it. But the best campuses are the ones that, you know, they make sure that the child care is available
there,
for
right.
single moms,
right.
and that, you know, they have family housing on campus, and some of them, I know UC Berkeley actually has a really great student moms organization, and so they, you know, they welcome all of these student parents and support them throughout their journey, and just make sure that all the resources they could need are available on campus. And that's what you want to see. You want to see
exactly.
that universities are welcoming, not just not discriminating, like you said, but welcoming to students who have children. And, you know, they want to be able to study and get their degree and, you know, be the best parent that they can be. And so schools should absolutely be supported. I think that would be the ideal for any university to support their students, including the 10% of those students who are parents.
We're talking with Molly Sheehan, who is the new Respect Life Director for the California Catholic Conference, which represents all the bishops of the state of California. Molly, in your job description, Respect Life Director, obviously when you see Respect Life, people think abortion, but it's a lot bigger than that, isn't it?
Yes. So I have a large portfolio. So, you know, if we're saying womb to tomb, my portfolio kind of covers that. So I am tasked with lobbying on the beginning of life, end of life, human trafficking, foster care, religious liberty, the death penalty, and also family support, as well as marriage. That's a lot of different things. So I'm trying to join all of the coalitions in California and contact all of the different organizations that are working on these issues. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful to see how many different ways that the Catholic Church is involved and how many different ways we can pass laws that benefit people and really do help them to flourish.
Yeah, you know, all the work that the conference does in so many different areas, it's one of the things that makes me proud to be Catholic and proud to proclaim that I'm Catholic. A lot of people they hear you're Catholic and they don't know much about it, and they don't have much to say, or maybe they even say something negative, you know, and you go, well, wait a minute, do you realize what the Catholic Church does in this society? Do you know all the things the Catholic Church does for good? Can you imagine what our country, our state would be like if the Catholic Church had never existed? We'd have a lot of people falling through the cracks.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Catholic Charities is the number one provider of social services in the country outside of government assistance.
Right.
And, you know, our Catholic hospitals serve millions of patients every year. And especially in rural and low-income areas, you know, our Catholic churches, they provide so many services behind the scenes that no one knows about, as well as, you know, providing the spiritual care that we need to get through our day and our refuge on Sunday, to go there. And our Catholic schools, they have been masterful throughout the pandemic. So those are just a few of the things that the Catholic community does. But we really do answer the call to feed the hungry and give drink to the thirsty and to, you know, clothe the naked and visit the sick and in prison. Like, we do all of those things. And, it's true. That's why I love being Catholic is, you know, we really do answer the gospel call. And there's always room for more. So in my job, I get to look at what else can we be doing, what else can we advocate for, how else can we improve society and respond to that gospel call.
God, who, you know, I look at who's doing the resettlement of Afghan refugees in Sacramento, Catholic Church. Who's helping with immigration clinics and teaching people about citizenship and learning to speak English, et cetera, Catholic Church. It's just it's a million different things that the church is doing and not patting itself on the back for doing it. I would think working with the California legislature and all those things you list, you know, obviously abortion, pro-life policy, human trafficking, domestic violence, disability, end of life, death penalty. You have to be on both sides because there's probably not one person in the California legislature that's on the same page with the church on every single one of those.
It's true, and it's actually something that I enjoy, is that, you know, I get to go into these meetings and talk to legislators, and we're not going to agree on everything.
Right.
But I get to bring in this beautiful Catholic social teaching that really shows the dignity of the human person at every stage in their life, and that there are various attacks on this human that we need to defend them against. And so from you know, the unborn child to, you know, the trafficking victim to the person on death row to the person at the end of their life. Like, this person is valuable and they matter. And so in my job, I get to advocate for that one human being throughout their life. And I love it. And I think, you know, for legislators, a lot of the time, the work that we do, you know, you're like, okay, we're not going to agree on this issue. That's okay. But we can agree on this. And if we can agree on this one issue, then let's work together on that. And so doing that, you can get a lot of good things done on behalf of the dignity of the human person and really recognizing, hey, I mean, if we can do something about homelessness, let's do it. If we can do something about human trafficking, let's do it. And if we can do something that helps pregnant moms out, let's do it. And I think a lot of legislators from whatever political party and whatever their you know, views across the spectrum, because we have everything in California, whatever their views are, there is common ground there that can be built around assisting human beings in need, because we all are human, and there's that common thread that we all want to do what is right. And even if our views are wrong, you know, we can bring truth into that conversation and say, look, this is what it means to support human beings, and I'd love for you to join us on this.
Yeah, sort of the seamless garment in the extreme, you know, just.
It's the idea that, you know, this is building up a culture of life. This is what that looks like. This is building up the kingdom of God on earth. And maybe I won't say that to a legislator, right? But I'll be like, look, this is a human person.
Right.
You know, you care about the poor. You care about the immigrant. You care about the pregnant homeless mom. So let's work together on that. Let's help that person.
I remember a number of years ago, I had a nightly talk show on KFBK here in Sacramento, and just, you know, just general talk. It wasn't a religious program. It was just general talk, and, you know, like most talk talk shows. It's 3 hours a night, and we get all kinds of callers. So because it was night, it would go all over the West, you know, and so you get callers from Oregon and Washington, et cetera. And so a wide range of conservative areas, liberal areas, and everything in between. And I remember one night, I think it was prior to an execution that was pending, and I gave my views on the death penalty and why I was against it. And a caller called, and he says, "Well, if you're against the death penalty, how come you're so in favor of abortion?" And I stopped, and I said, "When have you ever heard me in any way, shape, or form support abortion?" He said, "Well, I just know you are because you're against the death penalty." And it was just like, it was that dividing line, like one thing meant you were this, meant you were this, like building blocks almost, you know. And I had the chance to explain that, yeah, I was against abortion and I was against the death penalty, you know.
Yeah.
But it was this knee-jerk reaction that if you're that, you had to be this, you know. And I think it's obviously one of the problems we're having right now, and not necessarily with those two issues, but in our country. It's like one person stands for one thing, it means they bought the whole package.
Yeah, it's true. The polarization has really, tribalism has made it really difficult for us to have a conversation.
Yep.
But I think that there is opportunity if you frame it around the human person and not the political party that you belong to.
Yes, yes.
Especially as Catholics, because for us, you know, our job is not to necessarily like belong to a political party, but rather to call on the parties. For us as lobbyists for the bishops, our job is to call on the parties to become more Catholic, right? And so as Catholics, we're frequently at this both and, right? You know, we care about justice and mercy, right?
Right.
Or,
right.
You know, so many different things. So it's just trying to see, all right, how do we convey that in a way that's winsome and that works?
Yeah, it's so... It gets tested every day. I know, just personally, you know. And nowadays, they televise murder trials, you know, and you feel yourself just this animosity building up toward the person that committed this crime, if they did, and yet at the same time, when it comes time for sentencing, that mercy part comes in, you know, and it's almost like they're struggling back and forth.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for the concept of seeing that human being and seeing, you know, them, the truth of who they are, right? So that they've both committed this horrendous crime, and then that they're also made in the image and likeness of God, right?
Yep.
So being able to hold all of the truths about a person, I think, is very difficult for us. It's much more easy to put them in a box and say, well, they're just the worst thing that they've done, right? And it can be really, really bad. But even this person is made in God's image and likeness, and we know that they're loved by God too, as was the victim in the case of murder. The victim and their family deserves every kind of, you know, healing and support. And then we need to look at the offender and see how we can try and help this person to repent and change their life.
Yeah, that's the one thing that always saves me when I go too far down the path, is say that that person right there that I'm having trouble with is made in the image and likeness of God, and God loves that person like I love my own children, probably way more than I'm capable of loving my own children, but God loves that person. It may be hard for me to accept that God loves that person because I think they're because I've just watched them, you know, and whatever bad thing they did. And that's what we always have to keep foremost in our minds, though, is that they, too, are made in the image and likeness of God.
Amen. Amen. It's so true. It can be hard, you know, just being able to extend that personal forgiveness and mercy. But it's also, you know, it's also the Christ-like thing to do. And not to ignore the faults of the other person, or, you know, in the case of someone who's committed a serious crime, not to ignore the crime that they've done, but to acknowledge the truth of that, and then also to be able to extend that forgiveness.
Molly, what's the toughest part of your job? Where are your brick walls?
The toughest part of my job is, I would say it's when I'm facing a bill that is, you know that you're not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, I'm going to fight this because it's right, but I know that I'm not going to win it. I read this article, and I think about this a lot. There's an article by a guy who played for the Washington Generals,
mm-hmm.
and they're the exhibition team that always plays against the Harlem Globetrotters.
Definitely not going to win.
No, the Globetrotters get to win and show off and play all of these cool tricks every exhibition game, and the Generals are required to lose. Like,
right.
That's what they're paid to do, to make the Globetrotters look good. So one of their players wrote this amazing article about how he would take wins out of every single required loss that he had just because he loved the game of basketball. So I think about that guy a lot, and I'm like, all right, how do I take wins out of the things that the bills, even that I know that I'm going to lose, right? Like, this bill, it's going to pass, and I'm going to be upset about it. But maybe I can get some good media out of it, or maybe I can get some really good education out to our
right.
folks about this. Or maybe I can win over one legislator that I can go back to in the future, right? Or maybe we can soften it a little bit. So there's ways to take those wins. I think that's the hardest thing, but it's also, sometimes it can be one of the most fun things, is trying to figure out how to do that.
I want to find that article, because not only did the Washington Generals, were they paid to lose, but they were real basketball players. These guys were good college basketball players, and they weren't good enough to play in the NBA, so they signed up for this tour. They get to see the world and have a lot of fun, but they were good basketball players, and they're losing every single game, you know?
Yeah.
And
the guy who wrote it, I guess he played in the European League as well at first, and then transition to being Washington General. And he just wrote about how much he loves the game. And it resonated with me. I thought it was a beautiful story. So for all those who feel like you're losing out there, it's great to try and figure out a way to get some wins out of those losses.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Molly, it's a pleasure to finally talk with you. And our prayers go with you. You have a tough job to do. I'm glad you're doing it and I'm not. God's blessings at Thanksgiving to you and all your loved ones, and hopefully our paths will cross again soon.
Thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Molly. Take care. That's Molly Sheehan, who is the new executive director of Respect Life Director for the California Catholic Conference. And you're really, really well qualified for this job. And that is a tough job. According to the executive director of the California Catholic Conference, Kathleen Domingo, who's relatively new herself, she says Molly brings with her an expansive background advocating for life issues that will enable her to make a strong impact on legislation in the Capitol. The conference is thrilled to have her on board to strengthen our life and dignity advocacy efforts. And it is obviously the California legislature, it's divided, strongly controlled by one party, but and there are going to be things where what Molly's advocating for on behalf of the bishops and on behalf of the church will certainly be something the legislature is in favor of, and there will be many things she advocates for that the legislature, she'll probably lose, if you want to use the term lose, on that issue. But even in losing, you can, as she points out brilliantly, you can make some victories. Maybe you get somebody to look at something a little differently. Maybe you get someone to amend the bill so it's a little bit softer, not quite so harsh and et cetera. So it's really it's a tough job, but it sounds like they have hired the right person. She did graduate magna cum laude with her Master of Theological Studies from the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies in Marriage and Family. She holds a BA in Communication Arts from Franciscan University of Steubenville, and she also attended American River College right here in Sacramento before going on to all these great academic endeavors.
What's the one that's below magna cum laude?
It's like summa?
Summa cum laude. Okay.
Yeah, I knew people that had those honors. I could wave at them, but I think it's something to do with the tassel on your mortarboard, but I'm not sure. So I think,
One got an A minus, one got A plus, I think is what it is.
No, I think they're all A pluses. It's just like just one was, who knows? I mean, those are rare honors.
My parents are just happy I graduated. So I'm magna cum laude in my house for graduating.
That's, as I've always said, with six kids, you have them all over the map academically.
Yeah.
The number one thing you want them to do is their best. You know, live up to your potential.
Try.
Use your God-given gifts. And yeah. Sometimes, and I think it's the hardest part for kids in education is sometimes their greatest gift is not in academics. It's not math or science or it's just not the way they're made, but they have gifts. And it's up to us as parents to recognize those gifts and nurture those gifts. And it may be something completely different than this dream you had for your kid that they're going to be win the Heisman Trophy or graduate magna cum laude from Harvard or Notre Dame or somewhere. It may be something completely different.
I've tried explaining Bitcoin to my kid. He doesn't get it.
I don't get it.
Neither do I. I'm just kidding. I don't get it either. No, it's funny you say that because my son is an avid reader. Like to the point where like it's almost like
there's a bookstore right down the street.
I know, avid reader. That's right. You're right. But he's like it's a stereotypical. He hides under his blanket with his flashlight and reads all night.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great. But it's like it almost like school kind of bores him. So like he'll kind of get up and go, okay, fine, and he'll just do it really quick. And then he goes, yeah. It's like, okay, so you could do it. So it's like, you know, it's
not his interest level.
It's not his interest level. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, buddy, you're smart. Like, let's apply it. So the application of intelligence right now is my biggest thing.
That's really true. You know, yeah. You'll see that. We've had one like that probably could get straight A's.
Yeah.
But it's not lazy or doesn't want to do the work. It's just it's just doesn't interest him like stuff that's like going to the rock climbing wall and climbing all day.
Right.
But, I mean, that's great activity. You think that's great. I'd rather my kids doing that than, you know, doing something crazy.
Right.
And yet he'd love to do that all day. Maybe he'll end up working at a rock climbing
or maybe
place.
He'll be in the Olympics.
And maybe be in the Olympics. That's right. They have all kinds of sports in the Olympics now.
Oh, the thing for us that's like the real bummer is that we're homeschooled, so I can't blame his teachers for being boring.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I could, but I don't think it would go over well with mom.
See, homeschooling wouldn't have worked for me. I'd be out in the backyard playing catch, you know.
There's a lot of that, and I like to tell my wife it's PE.
Tennis ball against the garage door, you know.
Oh, I see. I do a lot of that with the kids. I tell my wife it's PE.
Yeah.
And then the really bad thing is I'm the substitute teacher who turns on the TV all the time because I'll be like, hey, you want to learn about Guadalajara, Mexico? Let's watch a show about it, and then we'll watch a YouTube about it.
Well, we'll take a field trip to In-N-Out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Look through the window. Watch how the burgers are made. We'll write a report about it later.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, and those are real potatoes they're cutting up there into French fries. Yeah, it's, you know, God has given all our kids gifts, and it's up to us as present parents to recognize them and to nurture those. And the biggest thing you can give your kids is that faith in God and in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
Held high, such small sacrifice. If not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the word.